Welcome back to Good Mood Podcast, where each episode promises to delve into the mosaic of Jeff Amos's life experience. I'm your host, Liz Leach, and I'm pleased to introduce you to this podcast. Jeff was born and bred in Sowerby Bridge, Coldale, West Yorkshire, where he's lived for over 70 years. This series of podcasts captures his story of growing up in Sowerby Bridge and how he entered into the world of performing arts and music. This podcast guarantees to provide an informative insight into life since the 1940s and opens up a perspective of how someone can choose to dedicate their life to creativity. Please subscribe to this podcast to be able to be alerted of new episodes, and also share this with friends and family who you think would be interested in the topic. When you have time, why not visit Jeff's website to find out more information about the work that he's done, which is jeffamos.wordpress.com. We hope you enjoy this episode.
The South Bank Show, which was rather cheekily named, I thought was rather fun, was between Grimsby and Cleethorpes.
Was it?
Yes.
How did you get the name South Bank then?
Well, they just chose it. South Bank of the river that runs through.
Because there's obviously the huge South Bank
in
London.
Yeah. So that was quite fun, and I joined up a friend of mine who I've worked on and off with him on various festivals, you know, things. Jim Smith. So it was all right. It was put onto a sports field as such. Most of it was next to that, but it was a big expanse of greenery there. We did one because there were loads of housing schemes, you know, detached houses, newish around. And of course, you know what you're going to get, you know, complaints about this, that and the other. To our surprise, the second year, we just before we started, we got a couple of letters from residents. They say, and we're really glad to see you've come back. There was nothing like, we sat on our lawns with the G&T listening to all this music. Mm-hmm. We didn't know much about it, but it's been very pleasant, you know, and I can't believe that. That's never, ever happened anywhere else, you know. And the first year at the hotel, which was not too far away there, I'd arrived over there with my lighting guy, that lighting guy from around here. And I stumbled into this room where there was obviously a team meeting going off. And the first thing that caught my attention was this Philippa, I found out her name later on. She looked to be about 6'4", willowy, and she was really laying the law down. And she said, "Oh, Jeff, I'll be in a minute. And furthermore, I don't want to see any of staff who were working in bed before the last of the drunken buggers had staggered off in that lift and gone to bed." And I thought, great, because a lot of hotels weren't very keen either, you know, over the years. It's just, I don't know whether it's the staff don't like the extra work or, but we'd fill the hotels. It was rare that there'd be anybody else in there.
Other than people there for the festival.
I mean, there was one festival hotel that used to lock up the grand piano at 9 o'clock at night. Somebody might break it. I said, we have international jazz pianists coming here from everywhere and you're locking it. So it was mad. Grimsby was fun. We started off with just one marquee and then a smaller one for the first year. And just a couple of miles down the road, there was a real ale retail shop that also supplied pubs, called Small Beer, I think. So if you ran out or looking to run out, I mean, it was not to deal with us, that was people, you know, charging the festival from the council. They just put her up. You know,
right.
So everything was really, really good about it, really. Certainly for the first 3 years. And
how many people would come along to that when there was?
Do you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was full.
Yeah.
However full would be, I imagine that there'd be about 1,500. I think something
that's
on that base. So it was great.
Yeah. Especially for that area as well.
Oh yeah. That was good. Certainly very fond memories of it till we decided to leave it.
Yeah. What were some of your favourite moments then?
Oh, there. Well, there was one thing with, you know, the alto saxophonist Dudu Pukwana?
No.
No, from South Africa. Sadly, along with a lot of the other exiles, he died relatively young, really.
Right.
And the bass player said to me, "Jeff, we don't want cash, we want the cheque." And I said, "Oh, yeah, the band's manager, Barbara, had already been in touch about that, because Dudu might just appropriate some of the cash."
All right, okay.
Go for a drink, you know. So that worked all right. So he went talking to Jim Smith, who was my colleague, who was the director of the festival. He told me about this. He said, "So I'm sort of keeping out of Dudu's way." So about an hour later, there's this Keystone Cops thing. Jim is hairing it down outside the tent looking for a Dudu's behind him just waving a stick or something with my money. It was all right, you know. I'm killing myself. Yeah, I was so hot. Just mad, completely bonkers, you know.
That sounds like
fun. And there was, you know, Carol Kidd, wonderful singer from Glasgow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she was really, really good. Her and Lulu up in Glasgow used to do these talent shows.
Ah.
And one would win, and the other one would win.
So they were like a bit in competition with each other.
Yeah, she wasn't very happy. But so that went on, and we were having a chat before, and she was saying, "I don't really like flowers, Jeff. Please don't send any on." Because it was run, in a sense, by the Direct Works Department, of course, they're showing off all their flowers on bottom of the stage and on the front there.
Okay.
So at the finish, I walked on and I put one rose in a big plant pot and had a glass of wine. I walked up to her with that, so
yeah.
That went down very well.
So what's Direct Works then? Did they sponsor
They paid for it, in a sense. Yeah. They didn't have an arts department at that time.
Uh-huh.
And Direct Works was, instead of hiring in people to mend the roads or paint buildings or whatever, it was all, most of the councils were like that at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And well, you can just guess. I went to the second year, I went and talked to the head of that department who was hanging around, seeing what was happening. And I said, "Any chance of getting a couple of toilets just at the back of the marquee here?" "Why?" "It's about a quarter of an hour's walk to go." I said, "Because many players suddenly might get an urge to just go on for a pee or what have you,
mm-hmm.
with 4 or 5, 10 minutes to go. Well, we could go down." I said, "You're not listening to me." Anyway, he got one, bring it. It's just like not working with lads who don't know what's happening, you know.
They don't have that kind of understanding of what's needed for artists.
Yeah, yeah.
Basic things.
So we'd fun.
Yeah,
we carried on after we left. Jim took on Glasgow Jazz Festival.
Is that after South
Jim.
Bank? Is that after running South Bank, you then went on to the Glasgow?
Yeah, well, it was still running, someone else took it on, but Jim said, "I've been invited to go up there. You fancy coming up?" Of course, because we got on well, you know, it was all right. So I think, I don't know, 8 or 9 years, maybe 7 at Glasgow. And that was good fun, because it's my favourite, one of my favourite UK cities, you know. I don't really, again, it's that, got a bit of dirt under its fingernails.
Absolutely.
So we enjoyed that, and that was like 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of, you know, huge names, you know, coming up there. There was one of the things, I think, in Scotland, that you didn't have to fight to get accepted that performing arts were all right and were good to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you were 3 points up when you were going up to talk to somebody about funding for running, things like that. That was good, you know. So that worked all right, yeah. And Max Roach won, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was with his partner, it was in the old fruit hall, was the gig, mm-hmm. this particular one. But all the dressing rooms are upstairs and the orchestra rooms and things. Mm-hmm. So I brought them down in the lift, which was probably about half the size of this room. It was massive. Mm-hmm. And I was just joking about it, saying, yeah, I suppose in New York you could, this would be a loft flat, wouldn't it? You know, apartment. So he started laughing and then he looked at me and said, oh, let's hope it don't stop. And it started to shudder.
Oh, no.
And I thought, you know. Anyway, it didn't stop. But,
yeah. So you did the festival up there for a good number of years then?
It was seven. It could have been even eight, I think.
Which venues did you use in Glasgow? It's such a big city.
Well, there was that one downstairs. That was the second year I was up there. Mm-hmm. And they used the concert hall upstairs, the city, what was it called, City Halls? It wasn't like the main Royal Concert Hall they have now, mm-hmm. but eventually we went and did some things there. And there was very small-scale theatre things, you know, like the Tron and what have you. So mm-hmm. it was all right, it was fine. I really enjoyed it there as well. Mm-hmm. When I was coming up for production meetings, I'd come up on the train, the normal way, just on the West Coast Line. Mm. I always came back on the Settler Carlisle Railway, and there was a really, really good deli in the station yard there, concourse at the time. So I get a bottle of red, I get something really nice, you know, some meat and what have you. And it was a slow run down, and I used to get off at Keighley, and the first year I got someone to pick me up, and the second year I did it. Somebody on the platform says, well, because I was asking taxis, he said, there's one just down there, go talk to them, because they're not particularly expensive. And I think they just charged me a tenner from Keighley all the way to here. So that was great. So,
and how far is that for people listening? That's probably about
14, 15 miles, maybe a bit more.
Yeah.
So by the time I drunk the wine on the way down, and then
stopped
at this lovely little pub, just a little bit lower down, Taylor's pub. So I was well pickled the time I got home. Yeah. But yeah, it was good, you know, I made a lot of good friends up there.
Yeah.
I still go up when I can see them.
I mean, there's such a, from what I understand and what I've been led to believe, there's a really good jazz scene in Scotland, isn't
there? Yeah, there is, yeah. Yeah, funnily enough, unless it's changed a bit, I guess, but there were more jazz players over in Edinburgh.
Right.
It was a healthier local jazz scene mm-hmm. over there. And of course, because we used to put local bands on, I made really good friends mm-hmm. over there. And in fact, ended up tour managing some of them as well. So, yeah.
So you'd have musicians coming over from Edinburgh to play at Glasgow?
Oh, yeah, you know, I'm like the local bar scene and things like that. As well as, I mean, there were Glasgow-based musicians as well, mm-hmm. But there were certainly more over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a happy time, really.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
Did it attract, like, because of the festivals that we were talking about in the last episode, we were talking about festivals that would attract international musicians.
Yeah.
And was that the same in Glasgow?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Miles Davis was put on up there.
Oh, my word.
Master Palazzo, is it the... is he from Argentina? Plays tango and things like that. Mm. He was there. Oh, yeah. B.B. King. I hooked up with again Diana Reeves, who had done one of the Philip Morris tours. Oh yeah, it was top line.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Mm. Yeah, very much so.
What were highlights for you then?
Oh, again.
Where do you start?
It all blurs, you know. Mm. Well, one of them, my 50th, I was up there, birthday, and We'd got Trevor Watts's Moira music on. Now, Trevor was born not far from here, actually, in Halifax, and so we put him on recently at the Puzzle. It was great. One of the three players from the sort of early mid-60s through. Mm-hmm. And this particular band he'd come up with, he had, was it two or three African percussionists from different countries as well as a couple of UK players. So So they found out it was my birthday that day.
Oh, right.
So at the end of that, we all retired to the dressing room. Mm-hmm. We'd bought them some extra food so Trevor could have a bit of I could have a bit of a party. And so the three African percussionists, so they said, each played me on their drums, happy birthday, Jeff, happy birthday, 50th. I hadn't a clue, and they could have been laughing. But, yes, that was quite fun, you know.
Yeah, sounds good.
I used to be in my free time a regular in the Clutha Vaults, and that's the pub that helicopter dropped from the sky through the roof.
I'd forgotten about that. But, I vaguely remember.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Can't remember. It's a few years
ago. It is a good few years ago now, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, wow, yes. Yeah.
Sad to say the least, yeah.
Yeah. And is there a College of Music up in Glasgow?
Yes, there is. Yeah. It's got a posh name now. The Tommy Smith tenor player?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he leads it, has done for quite some time.
Right.
And there's a good youth section in there now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you did the South Bank and then you finished the South Bank before you took on the Glasgow Festival?
Yeah, but I was doing Brecon and Bath as well.
At the same time as Glasgow.
Right.
There are a couple more that you mentioned to me as well. You mentioned the Bracknell.
Well, Bracknell was the big starter of it in the sort of more modern side. Again, run by a friend of mine, John, coming from Serious Productions.
Mm.
And at that time, Brecon hadn't started. It was like I started, I think, probably in 1981,
yeah,
maybe two, and I was asked to go down by John to just work stage management, you know, and just on, I think, like three or four venues to run.
Mm-hmm.
That was great. I mean, it was just brilliant music. It didn't rain. There was some indoor. But it was a big marquee that was the main space.
Mm-hmm.
Then lots of little rooms. It was a big-ish art centre, so there were rooms big enough to.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few years in, it got a theatre built for them.
That sounds a big festival.
Oh, it's massive. Yeah.
So how many venues did it have as a whole then?
Well, at that time there was the marquee and I think a smaller marquee, and there must have been maybe another half dozen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just ran on. It was brilliant. Absolutely wonderful music. Yeah. And then Brecon started up, so I started working on that as well. And then, of course, they also did a folk festival and I think a sort of pop festival there. And it happens, this is back to that fear of jazz. They were starting to get complaints about the jazz. It was too loud. This is people living there.
Mm-hmm.
Same old bloody story. So we took upload and we went, the next year I went to a place called Pendley Manor. Didn't quite work there. And then we went to Crawley.
Right.
In the newish arts centre. And that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I did 3 years there. I'm not sure. Started to get quite busy with other things then.
So whereabouts, Bracknell, whereabouts is that in the country? Whereabouts?
It's not far from Crawley. So it's in...
I've asked a geography question.
Yeah.
So where's south?
Might it be Reading Way or something? I think it's down in that neck of the woods.
It's in that area.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you find that, like, because you were involved in so many festivals around the UK, were there, like, lots of similarities between how the festivals were run and the type of artists you got and the type of vibe that they had?
Most of the ones were probably quite sort of similar in programming because that's what attracted people, you know.
Mm.
I mean, there were sort of, like, trad festivals around and they had their own particular clientele.
Mm.
And at the time as well, the ones that were running were able to attract good funding and sponsorships as well.
Yeah.
So, and what you would want to do in one or two instances you haven't had a, what they call a marquee signing in sport, I think, you know, someone famous and at the top of their tree, you might just talk to their agents or manager and say, well, look, we could, why don't we just stick at two or maybe three? Because, you know, it's, especially Americans, because they probably didn't really get how small the UK is.
You know, so, so, well, compared to
you
America.
Know, it's fine and we could probably afford that, but what we need, the fees, but what we need to do is make sure that we can ensure that we get a big enough audience to pay for it.
Yeah.
And that was never a problem, you know.
So you always found that you attracted enough people to
festivals.
And the funding, like, so... The funding that you got for the festivals, was that government funding? Was it local council funding?
It would be local authority, and there might be some more. You might get something from the Arts Council if you could sell it to them in the right way. And then there was a lot of sponsorship, you know, reasonable. You could get a couple of big sponsors here and there. It was not easy. I remember Red Stripe being the main sponsor one year. oh dear me!
What does that so like? How do you go about? How did you go about getting sponsors?
Was there are people who do that. It was never one of my forties, right. Really. That.
So like being another member of the team that you're going out.
And this would have been 84, 85 maybe, and someone from their marketing department said, you know. On a retail index, you guys have drunk about £5,000 worth of Red Stripe. Some of us, a lot of us. I've never drunk it since. Oh, dear me.
Did you ever find that when you were sponsored, did sponsorship, obviously it helped in the sense that it brought money to make it all possible, but did any of the sponsors ever... like cause restrictions or make things awkward?
Not to my knowledge at all.
Yeah. So it kind of, we were more supportive more than anything else.
You know, and especially the smaller sponsors, they could try it on. Can we get like 30 tickets, you know, or 30 tickets at for the weekend?
Mm.
Well, that's probably a little bit more than what you're sponsoring us for, you know. It's So you get that occasionally, but by and large, they were okay.
Yeah.
And sometimes they might say, and if you can get so and so, we could probably up the fee a wee bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't particularly a problem because it was always what we were putting on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't something that just wouldn't work and no one would want to come and listen to it. Mm-hmm. So you went with the flow a bit, really.
It all kind of came together in a way that made sense.
Yeah.
It'll be all right on the night.
Yeah. God, yeah.
So when the people came over, like when you had the big names coming over from America, because last time you mentioned about Nina Simone playing at Bath, you just mentioned Miles Davis up in Glasgow.
Yeah.
But would they come over and do a couple of the festivals whilst we're over here?
More likely in mainland Europe.
You're right. So
because the money was better there.
Right.
I mean, at Brecon... We had a partnership with, what was it called? RC, Jack, your head's going. It'll come back to me.
Mm-hmm.
But what they did, going back to how they had performing arts of sin, again, throughout Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was only a one-day village type of thing, there was always some money.
Mm-hmm.
No one quibbled about it to go and put something on.
Yeah.
And so the Masiak, that's it.
Right.
And the mayor was a big, big fan anyway. And what they do between Masiak would pay maybe even half the fee and expenses. And then there was Brecon and often Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
So we could sort that out and we could afford that. And that worked really well. You know?
So would you link across with other festival organisers in Europe to see what they were doing? And
I mean, that's quite... official, I suppose you could say. It was a time when you would just meet up chats, or you might get a phone call knowing that this person, band, whatever, is a particular liking of X, Y, Z, so, you know, do you want to come in on it, you know? There is a European Jazz Federation, I think it's called now, so it's much more structured. But it, so, you know, and maybe, you know, a couple of cities, one city in this country would maybe host it 1 year, a city in mainland Europe would do it, so, you and then there would be, not so much again from this country, but there'd be bursaries for travel and hotels for festival people.
Yeah.
And that worked all right.
Yeah. It sounds like there were a lot more... I mean, the organisation sounds like it's been there a long time, even though it's been formalised. It sounds like informally it worked really well.
Anyway, yes, it did, yeah.
People keeping in touch with each other. And
yeah. So that was... Yeah. It was quite cool. So I used to have some very, very busy years.
I know. So, I mean, you've mentioned as well about the Leeds Waterfront, and we've not talked about that one yet.
Oh, right.
It's a bit closer to your doorstep as well, isn't it, that one?
Well, that came about because when we started up the Bradford International Jazz Festival, I think 82 might have been the first one. I think we might have touched on that earlier. The guy that was responsible for that, Eddie Fenn, moved over to Leeds to do a similar thing.
Right.
Of bringing business and you know, major business into the cities. So I went to meet him and we had a good chat about it. He ran over 2 weekends. Indoors and sort of street work, so I programmed the whole lot, and it was all right. And when the publicity came round, and I had a look on one of the posters, and lo and behold, there's this little blue narrow boat, about 40 footer, on the front of it, and it was taken in really, really good weather, and it was coming through Rodley.
All right.
I was about to say we, because it was my boat with Joyce, my first wife.
Oh, was it?
It.
Did he know?
No.
Did he realise?
No. I did try and get some money off him.
They weren't having royalties.
Dear.
And
he'd
sold it on by that point, I guess. So was it still your boat?
Not now, no. I looked after it for a friend of mine for just over 5 years while he went off to do other... Well, he went off with his partner to run Sam's mum. He went off to run the Dolphin in Robin Hood's Bay.
Right. Oh, nice.
So I took the boat on for him. Just otherwise it would have just been misused.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you can't get a canal boat into Robin Hood's Bay.
No.
I don't think the sea worth the other.
No. The very big ones sort of are, but you'd have to do it at the right time of the year as well.
Can imagine it still be a bit treacherous.
Yeah. So
So did it, that must have been such a coincidence, and the organiser didn't realise.
They didn't. I couldn't help it. I just burst out laughing, and I think the person who designed it, I think she were a bit miffed because she thought I'd found something ridiculously funny in it.
Yeah.
And I had.
And it was true. She just didn't understand.
So Eddie's looking over my shoulder. Said, "Is that you?" I said, "Yeah."
So the Leeds one, was that connected with... Was the Leeds Waterfront Festival, was that the one that used to be down on the canal basin in Leeds?
This was a one-off.
Oh, was it a one-off?
Yeah. Yeah. It was 6 days spread over 2 weekends.
Right.
So it wasn't anything to do, although Leeds Jazz were up and running there. Because it wasn't purely jazz, it was there's African music going. And
it was a mixed bag of music going on there.
I mean, we had circus skills going off. I mean, the whole shebang, really. I enjoyed that.
So was that kind of to make it a bit more of a family-friendly festival as well?
Well, my brief was just to do a mixed art form, really.
Okay.
And it was about bringing publicity into what's happening around that area.
Was that at the time? Because Leeds Waterfront now is, along the canal side, is so different to what it was 35 years ago.
It was beginning to get done.
Was it?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
There was some warehouse flats there.
Mm.
But not much else, if I remember.
It was derelict a lot, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was okay.
Oh, sounds good. Sounds good. So that's like a lot of the major, the bigger ones.
Yeah. Oh, did I tell you about, again, going back to Sirius Productions, there was, I worked with them as a sort of artist, sort of coordinator or whatever, stage liaison. It was a concert for the Prince's Trust.
Oh, yeah, I haven't talked
about
that.
For Charlie. Did I?
No.
And it was all the delegates of the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, which was also in Edinburgh that time. And that was just so funny. We went to have a look around the day before, the special branch of air, and they're checking everything, as you know they would. And they even x-ray all the chocolate bars and the ice cream, you know, were a point of sale for all these little kiosks and things like that. And then we brought everyone in, and we couldn't leave once we'd been brought in. So there was a lot of musicians, I think it was like three coach loads and crews who weren't setting up earlier on. And because we got to know them, so we could see the special branch guys out there. Mm. And suddenly, they were having an absolute fit, because one bus had already disgorged the musicians and the others were queuing up to get in. They hadn't thought about instruments and bags were coming in.
In what sense? They'd all been left on the bus? Or?
Oh, no. No, the special branch realised that they hadn't x-rayed all these bags and instruments and things like that.
Oh, no. But the x-rayed the Mars bars.
Oh, yeah. And the ice lollies.
And the ice lollies.
And that was the day before. And they even took all the pay phones in there. They were taken out of working. So
no one could use them.
Yeah.
Is that how high the security is?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was for this. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that generally
you're talking about all the Commonwealth heads of government, for starters.
Oh, okay.
And Prince Charlie.
That puts it into context then.
You know, yeah.
So who did you meet there then? Did you meet any of the
Kings? I can't remember. It was a bit of a fraught job.
It sounds like it could have been. It sounds like it could have been very stressful.
I had to try and keep everyone happy.
Everybody that was caged up in the building.
I don't know if you know of a singer called Ron Sexsmith, Canadian. Lovely player, actually. His manager came up and he said, "Jeff, yeah, this is about 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon. Could Ray just go out and get a haircut?" I said, "You know the score. We're not allowed to go out. And I don't think you're going to find a hairdresser opened on a Sunday afternoon." Mm. I'm sorry, you know. But, and he looked at me. I said, "Yeah, you're right. I'll go tell Ron." I don't think he was very happy about
it. So how long were they in the building for?
We were in from 3-ish, and probably, I'd have to guess, 8-9 o'clock maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I went back with the second busload. The others were ready, somebody else was going to bring them up. And I walked into the big room we're calling the green room, and the artists, the musicians, was, "God, this is great, it's a free bar." And I'm walking away and I thought, no, there isn't one. So I had to rush up, because I mean there's a lot of them. and I said to the band, "Guy, you gotta stop." "What, why?" I said, "Who told you it was a free bar?" He said, "I think it was one of the musicians." I suspect it was on the lines of, "I guess this will be a free bar, will it?"
Then everybody heard exactly how the one
so
was
doing. When John and Johnny's mate, John Elson, came up, I just pulled it off. I said, "Look, I might be out of order here, but I've stopped that bar for now." "Why?" I said, "Because no bugger was paying. They told the bar." And they went white. Thanks, Jeff.
And as the trend tends to go with musicians, it wouldn't have been just one drink.
Oh, no.
It'd have been drunk dry, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Who was playing there then?
Ron Sexsmith. There was an Australian circus skills thing. Britain was, it was far more sort of modern than that. You're asking a lot of me now.
Oh, I know, sorry, Jeff.
You know, and so it was, they were chosen from several of of the different Commonwealth countries. Right.
So they had a lot of artists traveling.
Oh, there were a lot, yeah. And it was summerish, so some would be on the European circuit, but some of them would have been flown in and then back.
Yeah, for the event.
Yeah.
So you've done like a lot of big festivals. You've done hundreds, well, not hundreds, but you've done a lot.
Yes.
Of smaller festivals as well, haven't you?
Yeah.
And we mentioned Bradford in one of them, the Bradford International Jazz Festival. Although saying that, that wasn't particularly that small.
Oh, it wasn't small. I mean, at the time, whilst we might not have had the most biggest expensive names, I mean, with who else was there? Oh God, it's awful. This. I'll come back to that one. Gil Evans.
Oh really?
He was there with an Anglo-American band. So it was that's where I met Rick Taylor for the first time. That's when we fell in love with each other. Mm-hmm. I was back at the hotel that particular night, sorted some stuff out, and well, there was no need for me to go back. I don't mess with the lighting and whatever. They get on with what they're doing. So I think some lads had gone off, though, probably for a curry or whatever. So I was the only one in the Victoria Hotel in the bar, and I'd been asked by someone from the Sirius team, could I look out for this lad? He's pretty young, he hadn't been out of Leeds College very long. Mm. I mean, in fact, I never ever told him that he'd done. He's not, what do you mean I can't look after myself? She said, he's all right, okay. I said, okay. So I was stood there, just had a glass of wine in a cave, so I guess it always was. So I introduced myself to him, had a bit of a chat, told him about my family from South Shields, because he's from Altonley Springs, so it's good you can get that going and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I looked at him, I said, fancy a slammer? And he looked at me and said, nah, let's have two. You know? That was it. So that was,
That was how you met the first time.
We used to call ourselves the Rotunda Twins.
Brilliant. Because, I mean, I guess in a sense, the other festivals that you told me about isn't so much the smaller festivals, it's more of the closer to home.
Yeah.
Because you did a lot in Wakefield, you've done a lot in Calderdale, in Bradford, Sheffield.
Yeah. I've done quite a bit. Yeah. Most of them.
You've done quite a bit. Understatement of the century.
Most of them were like one-offs, just like, you know, a specific contract, you know, but no, it's great. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I was squeezing tours in between there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So you were like juggling, doing the local ones and then the national ones.
After I've done it, it was just great. Yeah. There were times when I literally got off a plane, washed, 2 days later got back on another one, or on a tour bus, you know.
Yeah, and off again.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what you've done really close to home, because as we mentioned in the first episode, you were born here in Selby Bridge. Mm-hmm. You've lived here the majority of your life, and you've done stuff around here as well, haven't you? So.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure. I ran People's Park on the bandstand, late 70s, just a one-day music event, which is a bit world music here, like a lot of people. I've never been happy with that description. I mean, what that, you know, I mean, yeah, it's music, you know, so it's coming from somewhere else. Well that's okay. And there was, and then locally, I was with a friend, we were running a regular jazz club. In the Calderdale area.
Yeah.
You know, started.
Was that in like one particular venue?
No, we moved. It was Queens Road Neighbourhood Centre for a while.
Oh, yeah. That's a big building.
And then we had to. It wasn't bad, but it was earmarked for something else.
Yeah.
We didn't know that. But so then we moved down to the Royal Oak in town, little pub. It's got ship's timbers on the outside.
Yes.
Opposite what was the Shakespeare Park,
yes,
is there.
Yeah.
And we went upstairs, you could get about 80 people in there. And that was not working all right. And then, my first man was Gary Bowen. So that's when I met Gary, fell in love with him. So, you know, Snake Davis was in the band at the time. Do you know Snake?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So that was good.
So did Gary play at the one in Halifax?
Yeah, several times over time. So, yeah, I hadn't met him then. It was so that was okay. And a few weeks of this, we maybe managed 6 or 7 gigs, maybe almost 2 months. Landlords, pubs are funny people, you know. I don't want you to do it after this one. I said, he said, well, no, I don't want. I'm going to be doing my own promotions from now on. I said, like what? He said, well, maybe wedding receptions or. And he was, I could see you just making it. engagement dues and all that business. It seemed people coming and he was making a lot of money on the bar.
But you wanted to make
and he wasn't paying anything towards, so we got the room for now, but that was it.
Yeah.
It never took off at all.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's not just a case of organising, being able to organise something. You've got to be connected in to know, to be able to find the musicians to come and play.
Oh, right? Of course, yeah, there's a lot to it. Just to get it, as so often happens, you know. And then so we went down, friend of mine, with a colleague of his, was taking on the Barge and Barrel down in Everett.
Yes.
They had a nice function room upstairs.
That was another big place.
Yeah.
Still
is, really.
Yeah.
And he said, well, come on down, we won't charge you. So that was Friday nights again.
Excellent.
And we got going, people turned up, the beers were good, etc., etc. One of the problems was we had, probably still have, I think maybe, I don't know if award-winning is right, but we have a very well-known sewage works in Halifax.
Well, literally sewage works.
Yeah.
Like stinky sewage works.
Yeah, and they were selling, you know, all sorts of stuff to put on your gardens, you know, sort of manure and all that. However, on the Valley Bottom, as you probably know, it's the wind is a westerly.
Oh.
So you come right down that valley from Sorby Bridge all the way down, and it was hot, so we'd try and have the doors open, and it stunk. But the problem was, when you shut the doors, it was too
still in the room. So it was in the room, and it was warm.
Yeah.
And there was people there.
Yeah.
Nice. Gorgeous.
Yeah. We carried on a wee bit, but Ken and his pal fell out a bit, so they sort of... There were two silent partners as well. Can't really say what went on. But anyway, so that it got
so it just came to a stop.
Where did we go then?
Did you ever do any at Three Pigeons then?
When we had it, sort of. Because, there are lots of people, I hope, listening to this who don't know it because they've not been to Halifax. It was an old-fashioned pub with 3 different rooms leading off the bar.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't open. We got that stopped. The plans were afoot to do that. Pull all that.
Rooms down.
We found the plans, so that was jumped on. And so Thursday nights was a bit quiet. I used to put duos on.
Mm.
It was all. We still paid them quite £80 when most people might have got 50.
Mm.
And it was usually just 2, maybe 3. But again, like when I've done gigs here at home, couldn't have anything with a drum, full drum kit on, because it just split your ears, split your eardrum. Sorry about that. With a sort of snare or a cajon, is it, where you sit on it? Yeah. That would be all right.
They're suitable out for that size,
basically. Yeah. And that went all right. And often people would stand at the door, they wouldn't go in.
Because it felt too...
Well, frightened, don't we? Because it wasn't pop, I guess, is one of it. And I think they felt that if they're in there and then they wanted to leave. And he used to say, look, if you don't like it, it's cold, sit down. But and then, you know, Gary played a couple of times. People would come up for that.
Yeah.
The room darkener, you know, Rob Mason.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I christened him that. Yeah. For people that don't know, again, the room darkener was named because he was 6 foot five and he was probably 6 foot broad. You know,
oh, really?
He's a big lad. Yeah, so.
Don't stand in the doorway.
Yeah.
And what about, tell us a little bit about what you've done with Fire and Water, because Fire and Water's very local, it's literally just around the corner from here, isn't it? And it's a takeover of the old fire station, council buildings and swimming baths with the intention...
And the fire station. The fire station, yeah.
Yeah, of turning it into a big creative hub space, isn't it? And it's been a few years in development.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it'd be good to know what you've done
there. Okay. I'm just thinking for people might be getting a bit bored, but those people that don't live around here, but we'll do a little bit more and then we'll move on a bit. This started by some... creatives, if you like, people who make things, you know, and put them on the street, things like that. And the fire station, where the bit where the fire engine used to be, it was empty. So we were looking for somewhere to be able to go and make things and have like theatre performances in there.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the ball rolling with the local authority. But then it came in, well, really, we'd really rather see you inviting lots of other community things going. It's not what we wanted, not because we didn't want people to be involved.
Yeah.
We had a feeling, this is what we would like, you know, we're busy people, you know. So anyway, we went on there and trying to raise money and, you know, Sorby Bridge again, people say, oh, things do happen there. We had this day in December that started about 4 o'clock, just as it was getting dark. And we had lots of street artists coming in. There was bands on there, lots of lighting going off. Also, and you know, we because I'd done quite a bit of that type of work over the years, we could talk to people who were friends with us and we knew them, that it was a time when people were working up new shows for Edinburgh or for going into Europe. Why don't you come down? You've got something half ready. You know, just pop down and so they'd give us a cheaper fee. It's brilliant. If you just look at Winterlight at Sorby Bridge.
Yeah, yeah. There's some great photographs of it online, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, like absolutely brilliant, yeah.
Big structures that have been
huge.
Made.
Yeah.
Figures or animals or, you know, and lit up paraded down the street. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Yeah, and between there and the Puzzle Hall pub, there was a local undertaker come join his company.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, I know quite well who runs it now. They used to do all this wonderful firework exhibition, you know.
Is that the guy that owns a company just out from the Puzzle? The firework company? Is it?
Yeah.
So he did the firework display for the festival
Yeah. I mean, Pete's getting on in years now, he's pretty much retired, but the funeral day is still going.
Yeah.
And so he hangs around with doing fire shows. And you can get, if you get your ashes off him as an undertaker, he'll put it in something and shoot the rocket.
But you are kidding?
No. You could go and have a cocktail, champagne somewhere and just let them fly up, have a bit of a party.
Oh my gosh, that is such a good idea.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going on my list. I mean, there's not a lot you can do with yourself once you're ashes.
Yeah.
But that doesn't sound bad at all, does it, really?
Yeah, it's crap.
I just hope that mine would actually land. Yeah.
We might be a small working class town, but...
We can't afford to be plotted anywhere, so we just shoot ourselves up into the sky.
It's a lot cheaper than...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's not the real reason, though. We do want to do things in style. That's the real reason, isn't it?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
I mean, we've talked loads about festivals that you've done, but I think it's only right that we finish this episode not talking about what you've done in the past, which is fantastic, but to talk about what you're still doing.
Still doing.
So just tell us a little bit about the jazz nights that you still run.
Okay, because I'm pretty much retired, I guess, now, sort of. So I ran it, first off, a weekly jazz night at this local pub. Tiny, 30 people in that room, and, you know, but you can get people in the bar room as well. Anyway, 16 and a half years, and that was weekly. So that's 51 gigs a year, you know.
Do the sums.
Yeah, I personally, and I'm not boasting, but I will say it, I worked out over that period, I spent about £26,000 on that. Well, it is a lot in one way. The other way is I was working and I wasn't particularly rich, but it was my way of putting something back in. And just introducing really great music to local people, really. And it would work out about 1,200 quid a year to put it in to perspective. Yeah. And that was just sometimes if there was a bit of a touring band and it wasn't big, I'd put them up here. So I'd feed them tea with wine. I'd feed them supper with wine. And then I'd feed them breakfast, but no wine. You know, so it was fine. And then it's too long a story, really. The pub got shut down and for about 3 years, really.
Yeah, it didn't.
And we managed, we being just local people, managed to buy it and, you know, sort of sort it out inside, and we're up and running again. Sadly, we can't afford to do that anymore. We only do it once a month now, which I'm frantic with it because that's like 11 gigs now, you know, rather than 50-51. But we've still been on the map. People are ringing up, say, on tour, can we fit them in and what have you, and I quite enjoy that. So, but yeah, and then what I want to do and what I'm going to do is this summer, we do things on Sunday afternoons from May for 3 or 4 months. I want to put a big band event on for three events, because I think people, and I'm aiming the first one as a family audience, just to get people to come along, and the wall of sound that isn't amplified much that comes off, and I think the little ones and not so little, to be able to put a sound to an instrument, because they won't know. You know, it's really neat to get people back used to going and listening to live music. Yep, there's the festivals, but they've done, I believe, a lot of damage over the years. People will save up and get a big ticket, and they might not come out to, you know. We're back to grassroots.
Yes.
It's so important, you know.
It really is,
yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that this year.
Isn't yeah.
I mean, the jazz nights, I came along to the last one. I've not been to one for quite a long time, and it was just such a lovely reminder of the vibe that's created in that little pub, and the people in the audience just being completely engrossed in the music and loving every moment of the music. And the musicians that were playing last time, oh my word, phenomenal.
I don't do duff music.
No, the quality.
Yeah.
The quality of the music and how much they were loving it.
They're wreathed in smiles, you know.
Yeah.
So. The first night of when we started it, and I won't mention names, but out of the 4 or 5-piece band, two of them were nearly blubbing. That was just after the second tune. Because it's meant and means so much to come and play there.
Yeah, it does.
Missed it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And we're difficult for us to get funding because we can't charge on the door, you know, that's... Mm. So there you go again, musicians subsidising themselves, you know.
Yeah.
But we keep going on that.
Absolutely. So for anyone interested who wants to be in a small, intimate venue that's got a great vibe and great music and great beer or wine, whatever you choose to drink, it's last Thursday of every month, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, bear in mind, sometimes there's five Thursdays in a month.
Oh, yeah.
We've had people turn up on the fourth one.
Awkward. Oh, well, it's still an excuse to drink, isn't it? As long as it wasn't the musicians that turned up.
Oh, no.
That would be slightly more awkward.
It would.
And even though it's free to get in, which honestly for me is such an unknown these days, to go to a really decent gig venue and get in for free to see amazing musicians. There is a hat round, isn't there? So anybody in the audience can put in, and that goes to that just goes to the musicians.
Oh yeah, no one else has the finger in that one at all. Yeah. It's important, you know, and people are as generous as they can be. You know, if there's someone who just really doesn't have anything, we don't make a comment on that. You know, that's that.
It's like
that's fine. Yeah.
Well, good stuff.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I have to confess that I managed to eat one of Jeff's amazing shortcake biscuits halfway through that podcast. So hopefully I didn't make any noise. I tried to do it as quietly as possible.
You wouldn't have if you got the ginger snap.
I know, exactly. I waited for the ginger snap. That's after podcast biscuit.
Right.
Well, cheers, Jeff. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Good Mood Podcast, a series that gathers together a rich mosaic of Jeff Amos's life experiences in performing arts and music. Hosted by myself, Liz Leach, we look forward to you joining our next episode. In the meantime, please subscribe to the series, recommend to friends and family who you think would be interested in this topic, and remember to visit Jeff's website, jeffamos.wordpress.com. We look forward to you joining us at the next episode.